When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. And there's some stories I can tell you.
It's the Final Word Daily 2023 Men's World Cup. Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon, I'm in London. Jeff's at the mighty Chinnaswamy in Bangalore, Australia, have registered their second win. We're here for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City, more extra, less ordinary. Jeff, tell us all about it in 30 seconds.
Chinnaswamy means small god, Adam, and that is what David Warner was in the middle today. He made 163 and, smashed him all over the place with Mitchell Marsh making 100 and, can't remember, 20. That number didn't lodge in my head for some reason, but they put on 259 for the first wicket, second biggest World Cup partnership ever for Australia, pushed them to 367, which wasn't very big because Australia lost 9 wickets towards the end after Marsh got out in the last 15 or 16 overs, and then Pakistan looked like they were going to chase it for a minute. A big 100 opening partnership between Shafiq and Imam, and then the wickets tumbled bit by bit. Ifty mania almost kicked off, didn't quite. They were all at 305, lost by 62.
So Australia 367 for 9. You're right with Warner, 163, Marsh 121. Record-breaking World Cup partnership for Australia, adding 259 for the first wicket. They lost 9 for 107 after that, seems to ring a bell, including 6 for 70, I think it was, in the final 10 overs. So they really were on track for one of those 400 days that everything clicked, but it didn't, which it often doesn't after a huge opening partnership, I find, Jeff, in one-day cricket, that if you really nail your first 30 to 35 overs, it's rarely the case that you stick the landing. But that was fine because they had plenty, and they held their nerve with the ball, and Zampa was the key to all of that, picking up Barbara's arm. Iftikhar, just when it looks like he was going to tee off and, you know, maybe even win the game for Pakistan, which would have been a record-breaking chase. And Rizwan as well, two of the three, leg before wicket. He bags his second fourfer on the trot, back in business. So are Australia. They were 10th at the start of the week. They're fourth now. They've got the Netherlands next, and they have the chance to really work their way through the middle part of the competition.
You spoke on the show yesterday about that friend who calls you up and you know that you're going to make some bad decisions. Sometimes the big opening partnership is like starting in the afternoon. You're like, oh, you know what would be a great idea? Why don't we start at 2 p.m.? And you have a great, like the first few hours, terrific. Everything's going really well. And, you know, by about 9 p.m. that night, things are not going anywhere near so well. The back half doesn't necessarily. It suffers when the first half is too good. That's all. Sometimes that's the case, right? And also, there were some things that were understandable about it, okay? So it's the 34th over when Mitchell Marsh gets out. And I thought Australia, rightly, they say, okay, let's send in Glenn Maxwell just to see if he can accelerate the innings. He tries to hit a 6 first ball and is out for a golden duck. Very, very Maxwell areas. There was just a moment where I thought, I was doing the description at the time, and I thought, I didn't say it, but I thought, you've got one ball to come in the Shaheen Shafridi over. Maybe just see this one out. Just see this over out and attack from ball two. And he says, no, I'm Glenn Maxwell. I'm going to hit this for 6, and was caught down the ground. So suddenly 2-2. Shaheen's on a hat trick after they've been absolutely smashed for 259 in 34 overs.
Yeah, one of two times he found himself on a hat-trick, Shaheen, who didn't bowl between overs 7 and overs 34 or something like that, which I thought was a huge misstep. And I was actually listening to your commentary of the Maxwell wicket. You and I, you know, our brainwaves are linked in so many ways with how much work we do together. I thought the same thing. Glenn, knock this on the head. He's just taken a wicket. Go the other way. But I actually admire the fact that he tried to swing at ball one, because he's promoted for that very reason. In a way, what I was surprised by was Stoinis not walking in next. Like, what's the point of having a go at accelerating and trying to go 400 just for one ball? I kind of get that Smith would have already had the pads on and they're not anticipating losing 3 wickets in an over and all the rest of it. But still, that did strike me as odd that they didn't kind of stick with the bit, having done so well. Let's go to the top of the list and deal with Warner and Marsh here.
Please.
Marsh has gone on a wonderful run. You know, he turned 32 today on his birthday. I'm not sure how many times batters have made World Cup hundreds on their birthday. I did ask Phil Long, didn't get back to me. He was probably working with you. But it couldn't have happened often. And isn't it great that he has taken this fourth or fifth opportunity at international cricket and made it really work for him, having suffered through so many injuries, having not been part of the World Cup team in 2019. He got called into the squad for about a week when Marcus Stoinis was injured and came in as injury cover but didn't play. Was a squad member in 2015, played the opening game against England, got a World Cup medal but wasn't much of an important factor through the course of the tournament. Certainly didn't play in the elimination stage, but it's clear he's the next one-day captain. 121. It's a great question that Australia have to answer. Who would have thought we'd be saying that a week ago? That Travis Head is going to come back into this 11. That is certain.
Yep.
Marsh will probably just go to three. But you hear David Warner, and we'll talk about him in a sec, speak at the halfway mark, and Mitchell Marsh as well. They're raving about their chemistry, about all the experience they have batting together for Australia and being in the same squads for 12 years now. I can see a world where they just stick with that, and maybe Travis Head has to be absorbed somewhere else, which, again, I given the way Australia started, that was never part of the conversation until they knocked off Sri Lanka a few days ago.
And because such a big part of Mitchell Marsh's game is how he bats against pace and how he bats against the new ball pace, because he hits that stuff so cleanly. And I know it's a cliche and it sounds silly sometimes, but literally the Western Australian upbringing, you can see how it has an impact sometimes on how he plays, particularly when it's quicker, particularly when it's shorter, like the Trent Bridge test innings against Mark Wood. Mitchell Marsh didn't have any problems facing Mark Wood. Everybody else did during that match. Because there was bounce and pace in the pitch, he was used to that. He was able to deal with that. So he can smash fast bowlers, and he started doing that from the get-go. Even before Warner kicked off, Marsh was kicking off. Big booming six down the ground. He hit a number of those. He hit one that just pumped straight into the sight screen and bounced back. And that was before Warner got going. Warner hits a six in, the third over, I think. And then he chips that one up in the air. Next time he tries a big shot. So top edge, loops down to mid on. It's in the conversation with the worst drop catch I've ever seen, just in technical terms, because it was so simple. It didn't go super high in the air. Like, watching from the commentary position, it just sort of looped up towards, it was mid-on for Warner, and it was Asam Amir, the leg spinner, the tall, lanky leg spinner who'd come into the side in place of Shadab Khan. He's just been brought in. He's stationed there. It's coming straight to him. It's nice and simple. I don't think it even hit his hands. I think it just hit him in the chest and bounced off. Warner's on 10, and I know you can say, well, okay, he made a score because he got dropped, but from then until there was another half chance on 105. So between 10 and 105, he middled everything. He hit the ball so sweetly. He smashed the living shit out of it, if I can use a poetic term. And then after 105, he goes on to 163 as well. It was the best, most sustained display of attacking batting that I've seen from David Warner in what feels like years. The straight drives down the ground, the way that he played his cut shots and his pull shots. And I'll come to one particular shot in the Hall of Fame as well, which I want to save until then. But and then at the same end, Marsh is just doing that Mitchell Marsh thing, which was the cut shot particularly banged down into the ground, like that crispness. He was picking up runs behind point so easily. And then pretty much just, if you pitch it up, I'm going to put it back over the bowler's head. So simple, so straightforward, but because he hits the ball with such power, he was able to do it. It was just thrilling fireworks stuff through that first 30 overs, first 25 until they started to slow down a bit. As the spinners came on, rotated the strike a bit, nudged it around for five or six overs, then accelerated again, hit a few more sixes until Marsh is finally out. It was an extraordinary partnership. Second biggest for Australia ever in World Cups. The biggest was the 280 that Warner put on with Smith against Afghanistan at the Wacker in 2015. So, you know, as far as the Chinnaswamy goes, it was a pretty decent bowling attack and they absolutely lathered them.
Just want to back over a couple of those bits. So Asam Amir, we're never going to forget his name for all the wrong reasons, the poor bastard. I mean, you could see those nerves jangling as the ball was hanging in the air. And the way he tried to catch it up on his chest, right underneath his chin, Matt Hayden made a good point on commentary. You can't actually see the ball when you do that. It has to be fingers up or down lower. He got caught betwixt and between. You're right, it didn't actually touch his hands on the way through. Just to go back to Warner, I've got in my notes here, I'll be interested in your thoughts on this, having been there at the Chinnaswamy today. Warner version 1.0. A lot of that hitting reminded me of Warner, the guy we remember from the century in the session at Perth in 2012. The guy we remember clearing the front pad and popping ball after ball over cow corner. For a long time, Warner didn't play that way. Michael Divinetto became the Australian batting coach, I think from memory, around 2014. And the way that Warner learnt how to play between, let's call it cover point and backward point, his second century in a session, I know a different format, but bear with me here, was at Sydney in 2016 against Pakistan. And that was all played that way. It was like what watching two completely different batsmen, but able to score at the same kind of tempo. This was more version 1.0, which we seldom see. David Warner, in his best years in the IPL, of course he can advance down the track and smack a bowl over his head. Of course he can smack it 100 metres over the leg side, but most of his work was done along the turf, playing more conventional shots or forcing shots. But this, from a technical perspective, seeing Warner, I don't know, go back to his true north or something like that. And if this is the way Warner's going to play in the final chapter of his career, that's bloody exciting, because it's nice seeing him go back to core principles. Mm. I'm not sure whether that'll stack up to scrutiny when he gets asked about it, but it did feel noteworthy to me. And yeah, with Mitch Marsh, you know, he's got that straight arm shot we talk about all the time, off the mark with a six in that direction today. I think he does do his best work when the field's up. I think he's liberated by knowing that he's not going to get caught on the fence, and the fact that he could keep going all the way through, hit nine sixes as well. It stood out to me that Australia hit, well, 18 sixes between that pair and 19 all up. Pakistan, who came pretty close, didn't hit a six between the 14th over and the 36th when Iftikhar hit a couple in a couple of balls. So a different kind of approach to compiling a big score, 672 runs made on the day. But yeah, the drop of Warner, noteworthy, but the way he made the most of it, and has picked up a little groin niggle along the way, said on television when named player of the match that it was just a cramp thing, so he should be fine for their next game. But they play the Netherlands next, Jeff, and I know we're jumping ahead a bit here, but they've gotten through that tough bit playing India and South Africa first up, and provided South Africa make the semi-finals, that actually won't affect Australia losing those two. They've got to win these games. Other sides of the vying for positions, let's call it 3 and 4, games like this, games like the one against England, which will come up in a couple of weeks' time, I think on the 2nd of November when they play at Ahmedabad. Games like that with sides that are in that range of between sort of 3 and 7, and this was very much one of those.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say with Warner going back to the old style is he doesn't bomb mid-wicket in the same way. He used to do that kind of angled bat, drag across the front leg sort of thing, you know, basically a slog, and he had good hand-eye and nailed it. If he hits to the leg side now, it's more cross bat, it seems to be, and then he's got those gears to be able to sort of play those sweeps and so on behind square, and those deflection kind of shots, and then to hit straight back down the ground. So it's like, because, you know, people sort of thought he was a filthy slogger in 2009, and occasionally he was. He doesn't really do the filthy slogging bit so much anymore, which is an interesting development. But yeah, the rest of it was astonishing to me that up until that 34th, 35th over, Shaheen Shafridi had bowled four overs, and they were just like, oh, we just didn't think we'd use our best bowler, the guy who's really good at stuff. Let's just not put him in, because we really want to see what Mohammad Nawaz is going to do with some left-arm orthodox stuff around the wicket. And eventually, at the point that they finally brought him back on, he gets 2 and 2, starts to get them into the game, and they're able to, like, they actually held Australia, which sounds ridiculous, at 367. But they were, you know, it could have been worse. There was a point during the innings where it looked like 400 plus, and then gradually they're able to chip away at wickets through that back end, and Shaheen picks up 2 in and over again towards the end of the order. Was it, who did he get out first ball the second time around? Was it Stark?
Stark, then Hazelwood.
Yeah, sorry, Hazelwood was the golden, the second golden duck. Yeah, Hazelwood fishes at one outside the off stump. The idea that you would have seen Josh Hazelwood batting when they were none for 259 in the 33rd over, 34th over, was pretty far fetched at that point. Yeah, and then Pakistan actually start really well. Abdullah Shafiq, Imam Ul Haq, they weren't going crazy, but they brought the 100 up in the 17th over, I want to say, whereas Australia brought it up in the 13th or 14th over. So they weren't going that much more slowly than Australia. They needed 7.5 from the get-go, but you know, and they upped the tempo as they got close to 100 partnership. They ended up at about 6.5 and over. They both got into the 60s and were looking pretty good for a while, until Abdullah Shafiq plays a little pull shot, Marcus Stoinis, the break through the top edge, and then he picks up the other opener as well, gets Imam caught down at deep third by Mitchell Stark, well taken low down. And from that point, Australia were into them. It had to be Babar and Rizwan. And when it wasn't, it was pretty much all over.
Just a bit of statistical miscellany for you, Jeff, on the Aussie innings before we move on and talk about the Pakistan chase. David Warner's now got 47 international centuries. He overtook Joe Root's 46 today. Next is Dravid on 48. Then it's Lara on 53. But Dravid's the top 10. So he's got a chance. You know, you'll think he'll be a chance of reaching Lara at 53, which is, you know, a pretty good effort when you consider the way we consider, or the way we think of Brian Lara, rather. And the way we think of David Warner. I know batting at the top of the list in one-day cricket inflates that somewhat, but you've got to make the runs.
But Mitch Marsh, Lara batted 3 usually in one day.
True. True. And just on Marsh and his record recently, so this year alone, the century at the Chittaswamy, 96 against India at Rajkot a couple of weeks ago, 81 from 55 balls at Mumbai back in March, 71 against South Africa in double time at Johannesburg, and the half century against Sri Lanka. So he's really clicked at this level. His overall average of 34 or something like that is pretty good, not bad at one day level, but it's been what he's done in this opportunity, in this era of Mitchell Marsh, when he stopped being a number six and more went, you know, into the top three consistently.
Well, just I'll give you a couple of stats miscellany bits as well, because I just wrote a piece on this for the paper. David Warner, now seventh all time for World Cup runs. He's five runs shy of Brian Lara. So he'll catch Lara in this tournament.
Oh, nice.
Of the other six ahead of him, they've got, you know, top three being Tendulkar, Sangakkara, Ponting, or the not in that order. He's got Kohli and Rohit are both within about 70 runs of David Warner for World Cup runs. So they're all in a pack together, seeing who can do what during this World Cup. And also Warner's got the third highest average for any Australian player in one day cricket who made 1,000 runs or more, behind Bevan and Hussey. And yeah, 21 one-day centuries. Ponting made 29. I've kept on saying that Ponting made 30, but he made 30 all up, but that includes the World 1100 he made in the Tsunami game. So he made 29 for Australia, but 30 overall. So yeah, I mean, nobody else is close. That's the second most. I think Mark Waugh made 18 and Warner's up to 21 now. So it's a pretty monstrous career that doesn't get talked about a whole lot, about what he did in 50 over cricket.
Yeah, I suspect in hindsight it will an awful lot more. Just on that chase, so they put on 134 for the first wicket, and that's broken at the start of the 22nd over by Stoinis. And, you know, I love the response from Stoinis, flexing the arms. I don't know what Stoinis was saying exactly, but whatever it was quite demonstrative. And getting Imam in his second over for 70 with that ill-considered. It's probably the first mistake Imam made. I know he's dropped at mid-wicket by Cummins, but, you know, an uppercut down to deep third didn't feel like the right shot. So they fall in relatively quick succession. But I just want to say credit to Pat Cummins here. He made good changes at good times tonight. Stark wasn't at his best. He did keep the streak going. The penultimate wicket gave Stark, got him in the book, which he's done in every World Cup game. Hazelwood we'll talk about in a sec. But the changes that he made, getting Stoinis both into the attack and then out of the attack again, getting Zampa back on for the matchup, warning Zampa to bowl to Barbara's arm, and then getting him caught at mid-wicket by Cummins two balls later, having already dropped the catch. You know, Cummins is moving these chess pieces. A guy who's taken two wickets in two overs, he's like, right, that's not our plan. We don't want Stoinis bowling to Barbara's arm. We want the spin of Zampa. Got to get him out of the attack, even though it feels counterintuitive. And that pays off second ball. And it's him taking a diving catch to remove his opposing number. So that felt like a significant turning point. It was still kind of game on with Saul Shakil, who I thought batted really nicely, hit five boundaries out of his 30. But Shakil falls to Cummins himself and bringing himself back, second ball back into the attack, finds the top edge from a pull shot that wasn't quite. Stoinis running back with the flight. Another excellent bit of fielding after Australia. Did drop a couple early on. Sean Abbott, the sub, on the rope, which cost them six runs and a wicket, and the catch that Cummins put down also inside the power play. But they made up for it later. And Cummins, who picked up, I think, two or three wickets himself, all told. And as for Josh Hazlewood, you know, his economy rate today is 3.7 in a match where the going rate was about 7 and over, so nearly twice as effective as anyone else on that measure. It was only right that he got into the book at the end, because that power play, you know, going back to the very start, nearly got off the rails for Australia. None for 40 after 5. All the runs were coming at Stark's end, a little bit like that Sri Lanka game that we did a few days ago. One end was heavy, very heavy scoring, one end wasn't. But Hazlewood just kept the clamps on to an extent, which gave Australia enough scoreboard pressure to apply later on. So, you know, Hazlewood was best of the bowlers in the sense that he kept it tight with 1 for 37. And Zampa, you know, what a time to get back to full fitness. Cummins referred to him as Lazarus in his interview after play. Apparently, Zampa's been in bed for a week with this ongoing back complaint, but got himself up today, the three key wickets. And, you know, if we were doing votes, Zampa's probably getting, well, at least one. I don't know whether he overtakes Mitch Marsh, but, you know, Warner and Marsh for their partnership, but Zampa and Hazlewood brilliant as well.
Yeah, basically Warner and Marsh put on so many runs that Australia yeah. were able to have some bad patches and were able to absorb some good partnerships. And then just a word for Iftimania, Iftikhar Ahmed, yeah. God love him, so good to watch. He was 2 off 8 balls at one point, then suddenly he was 24 off 18, hit 3 sixes, hits 2 off Cummins, both beautiful clips off the pads, the timing, one way behind square, one in front of square. And then was it Stoinis who he baseballed down the ground, took it off the top of the bounce. Incredible. He's such a weathered looking dude. It's like he's been left out on the deck of a ship for several decades. He's like the old man in the sea, Iftikhar Ahmed, who's apparently still in his 30s. God knows how. those numbers don't add up, but his numbers when he decides to just start smoking sixes do add up. And just for a bit, it was like, okay, well, they need about 120 from about 80 balls here. That gap's not too big. Like, two massive overs somewhere along the line, and you pretty much close that gap up. And with Mohammad Rizwan out there with him, off, who was like 37 off 34 at that point, I was like, okay, they actually could do this. They could run this down. And had he stayed out there another 4 or 5 overs, maybe it would have happened. It didn't end up happening. Zampa comes into play with those LBWs and so on. But, you know, for a minute there, it was fun to dare her to dream.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, if Iftikhar Ahmed faces 40 balls, they're probably most of the way there, but he faces 20. And Rizwan, you know, I was doing the Guardian coverage and I couldn't help but reflect upon Karachi last year, the game we did together, and, you know, on that occasion, hits a century in 2.5 hours after Barbara's arm batted for 2 days for 195. You know, he's got that ability to go very quickly when he needs to, but yeah, wasn't to be. And they fell away towards the end. I thought they were going to play some net run rate cricket for a while, but 305 all out, they don't do too much damage to their overall record, Pakistan, but they absolutely need to win against Afghanistan. They have the shorter break. I think their next match is on Monday against Afghanistan. So Pakistan, who won the first two games, so they're in a slightly better spot than Australia to begin. But now, having dropped beaten badly by India on Saturday, and after the break, 6 day break, the longer break, losing to Australia, they have to get back on track effectively straight away, or they'll fall foul of the net run rate problems that we've been discussing every day.
Hall of Fame.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's do it, Jeff. It's the time for the final word. Hall of Fame. It's brought to you by Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. Hey, are you or someone that you know aged 12 to 24 looking to grab your future with both hands? I mean, I know a few people. I know a few people between the ages of 20. Maybe not, but if you're listening, more to the point, maybe you're not sure about what you want to do after school. Maybe you want to better understand money, or maybe you're the first leg spinner who dreams of carving out a career as a batter.
Yes.
And copy that's listening to
show. That is good copy.
They're aligned with us. That's final word copy. Whatever you're looking for, future you is happening between the 19th and the 22nd of October at Westfield Stratford City. So today's the 19th. So over the weekend, next 3 days, get yourself down to Stratford City. It's the place for you. Something for everyone, including DJing and hip-hop workshops, clothing upcycle session, clothing upcycling sessions. Nearly went the wrong way there. Trainer customization, mental and financial well-being workshops, and even cricket taster sessions with Middlesex and Essex Cricket Clubs. All sessions are free, but book online to avoid missing out. Google Westfield London, but specifically here, Google Westfield Stratford City for more information. So that sounds like a pretty cool idea. It's called Future You. Over the weekend, Google it and get down there and have yourself a taster cricket session. Or I'm probably more interested in the hip-hop workshop. I'm not sure what that would be exactly, but sounds like a nice way to spend the weekend. If I were 12 to 24, I'd do this.
Oh, it's way better than, I mean, the only career stuff you could learn at Westfield where we grew up was like how to escape a drug deal on rollerblades. You know, it was...
Yeah, how to make a bong cut from the middle of the hose.
Yeah. It's a very much classier establishment here. Well, not here, but in England, where London and Stratford City, which is in London. Quick nomination for me, Mitchell Starc. I really wanted Mitchell Starc to take at least one wicket today, which he did, because that took him to 55 World Cup wickets, which meant he levelled Wasim Akram while playing against Pakistan. Just a nice little bit of synchronicity there. So he delivered.
I've got quite a few here. I was going to mention before in the wrap-up, I forgot to do so. The fucking hideous review, first ball of the game, Shaheen Sharafreddy. We've had three shockers on the first over, and this was the first ball this week. It was Starc against Sri Lanka. It was Trent Bolt with whoever New Zealand were playing a couple of days ago, which I've already forgotten. Afghanistan, and it was Shaheen today. I think Shaheen's the worst of the lot because in Saturday cricket parlance, he fucking smashed it, Mitch Marsh, onto his pad there. I think it was Marsh, might have been Warner, who cares. Around that time, I was watching with my daughter Winnie on my lap. We were watching the pregame, as I like to do. I like to watch the toss and hear what the captains have to say before breaking off and doing a few other things and returning to cricket through the course of the day. And we watched the national anthems together, and Winnie said, "I didn't know there were songs in cricket," which I thought was a lovely sense of how little she cares about the game and how much she likes music. She also said when they cut to an empty bay of seats, bear in mind it was a great crowd tonight.
Yeah, really good. Should have mentioned that off the top. Like it wasn't full, but it was probably three quarters, and they were loud. Even in the first innings where it was only half full, the noise was, this was the loudest game I've been at this World Cup. It was great.
On commentary, it's hard not to sort of think about and reflect on it when you're watching it all day. Matt Hayden's on one at the moment, so just buckle up and enjoy the ride. He mentioned Kingaroy and peanut growing territory within 10 minutes of the broadcast starting.
Of course he did.
And then he got really fired up. He nearly came when Sampa took a wicket at one point. He got really fired up about grit and determination. This being what it's all about, to be an Australian fucking cricketer. It's Australia Fair. Went real hard. Speaking of commentators, Watto, he's so good. They do a commentary box shot at one point, and as they're throwing to him, he goes, "Oh, better make sure the shirt fits," and takes the piss out of himself after that photo that circulated during the week of him having that hole where his chest is bursting out of his shirt. I'm sure most people who listen to this show will be familiar with what I'm saying, Jeff, but he immediately took the piss out of himself, and that says a lot about Watto.
There's no shirt that can contain the big rig, and I can also, it's probably okay to do a little glance behind the curtain. I ended up sitting next to him on the way here on the plane, and he spent the entire time doing research. He was very diligent. He was doing all of his stats and really doing the prep, so he's hitting all of his marks.
That's what you want. And my last bit of credit goes to the cricket ground and TJ, Jeff. Australia's first wicket, Barnsley, working class man, and every subsequent wicket, at least I could tell, the easy beats Friday on my mind, which what a tune. It's a great job being the cricket ground DJ, but that man or woman has done their research as well. Barnsley and the easy beats, tick tick.
I've got one more because I wanted to talk about the David Warner shot from early in the innings where he steps across his stumps and plays. It's not the kind of lap shot in the way that Joe Root plays it. It's more like he's shaping to play that pick-up pull shot that he sort of plays off the hip. But he'll end up on one knee. He played one against Sri Lanka the other night, and he gets under the faster bowlers and lifts it so high in the air. This one hit the roof of the Chinnaswamy. There's like the ridge, the lip around the stadium. It's incredibly high. They tracked it as being 98 metres in distance. It hit the roof about 6 inches below the top of the roof and bounced back into the spectators. Had it not hit the roof, it would have been 130 metres, I reckon. It was absolutely enormous, and it was thrilling to watch. When you see it happen live, it's like a rocket launch. It's incredible.
An anti-Hall of Fame for me. As you know, Jeff, I love the Chinnaswamy. It's my favourite ground in India. Love Bangalore, full stop. They've changed the light towers. You know how often I bang on about the Chinnaswamy light towers looking like VFL parks? Which they did until very recently, and they've upgraded, which kind of broke my heart a little bit that I saw the photos come through from the ground yesterday at training that the Chinnaswamy has officially moved away from the old Soviet light towers to a more modern, sleek version. So rest in peace, big boys. You will be missed. And credit to the Pakistan fan today, by the way, who kept chanting Zinzabad Pakistan so much that he got himself in trouble. That's going to be a bigger story, I suspect. I don't want to take the piss out of that, but he kept doing it, and to his credit, he's backing in his team. there aren't many Pakistan fans in India following the team at the moment, clearly, so that's not for nothing.
All right, I think that's it. I think this has been the Final Word Daily from the Chinnaswamy in Bengaluru. It was Australia, it was Pakistan, and we will be back with you tomorrow because that's how a daily show works.
Yeah, quite a bit on tomorrow. We've got the Netherlands playing Sri Lanka in the early game. I'll have Cam Ponsonby with me for that one. And Jeff, you'll be covering at the Wonka Day, work, rest and play, England and South Africa. Who have you got with you for that podcast?
I'm working that out. That's we're thinking on our feet at this stage of the campaign.
Okay. TVC on that one. Either way, there'll be two apps in the feed. Storytime, a history show, will be there on Monday as well. So thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. This has been the Final Word Daily for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See ya.